Hi, I'm Paul Havershood, host of The Cost of Living. It's a show about money and how it shapes our lives. In big ways, like why inflation could get worse if we all make more money.
Here's the hard truth in all of this. Workers are going to have to eat that real wage loss.
And small ways, like what's the fastest way to order fast food?
That first Big Mac that comes out of the kitchen is going to the drive-thru.
Check out The Cost of Living. We're on CBC Listen or wherever you get podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
Burton Cummings wrote some legendary songs while he was in The Guess Who. Now he's taking an extraordinary step. He's preventing the current lineup of the band from performing the songs that he wrote. He calls them a fake band, a cover band. Today on the show, the fight over The Guess Who. I'm Alamin Abdul-Mahmoud. This is Commotion. Why don't we get things going with this?
These eyes cry every night for you. These arms long to hold you again.
Come on, that is an all-timer. From 1969, that is These Eyes from Winnipeg's The Guess Who. If you've never seen Superbad, by the way, Michael Cera has the best scene featuring this song, so do yourself a favor, look up Michael Cera performing These Eyes in the movie Superbad. It is one of many classic singles that turned them into the most popular Canadian rock band on both sides of the border in the 1970s. Here's the thing, though. The band split up in 1975, but it turns out that was just the beginning of a drama that is still unfolding. So on today's podcast, we are going to dive into the battle over the band's legacy and also who gets to control it. But first, you need some context to understand what's happening here. The Guess Who's most famous songs were largely written by the singer Burton Cummings and guitarist Randy Bachman. Both of them left the band by 1975. And since 1975, original bassist Jim Cale and drummer Gary Peterson have kind of taken ownership of the band name and have toured at different times as The Guess Who with various other musicians. Cummings and Bachman have filed a cease and desist lawsuit, but while waiting out the decision, this month, Burton Cummings made a rather unconventional move. Let me explain this to you. Let's say you've got a cover band. Let's say you do a wonderful cover of American Woman. It is such a good cover. It's as good as Lenny Kravitz's cover of American Woman. And you do this cover at your local pub. The reason you're legally allowed to do that is thanks to a traditional performance rights agreement that is made between songwriters and organizations like SOCAN in Canada or BMI in the United States. Those organizations then collect royalties from the music venues on behalf of the songwriters. But what Burton Cummings has done is he's terminated those agreements with those organizations, which means he himself can now decide who's allowed to perform his songs, and the current version of the Guess Who have now been denied that right. I had the chance to speak to Burton Cummings about all of this. Here's our conversation. Burton, thank you so much for coming on the show today. I really appreciate your time. Listen, before we get into all of it, I just wanted to know, how are you feeling right now? I can't imagine what it's like to be in a legal battle with a bunch of people that I used to be in a band with.
Well, it's awful, you know? What can I say? I've watched these guys fraudulently use my songs and Randy's songs and Kurt Winter's songs for years to advertise their fake shows. And then even when COVID hit, after the COVID, you know, restrictions were lifted a little bit, this fake band just stepped up their advertising. They started using my voice, Randy's guitar. They started using all the original records to promote. And more so than ever before that, like after COVID, they really stepped things up. You can't have promoters and venues playing my voice and Randy's guitars doing American Woman and my voice doing Share the Land and These Eyes. And then the people go and pay high prices and they see a cover band.
Burton, there's a lot of things I want to unpack in there. You use words like fraudulent, you use words like fake band, and I'm going to return to those in just a moment. But what do we know about whether it's the band making the ads or the venue and the promoters? Because as far as they know, they have booked the Guess Who. That is, you know, they've gone through the process of booking the Guess Who, and the Guess Who have kind of are coming to their venue. Go ahead.
Let me explain that. You see, there's no promoter or radio station that's going to use my image and the original records to promote a tribute band, a fake band. No promoter is going to do that. They think the band is marketing themselves as the Guess Who, as the guys that cut those records. They are marketing themselves as the guys that did These Eyes, American Woman, Share the Land, Clap for the Wolfman, Star Baby, all the hit singles that we charted. These guys are pretending it's them. It's not.
Burton, I got to just stop you there for just a moment, because when we hear fake band, I think we just got to make this distinction. They're making the argument basically that lineups for bands change over time. That is a regular part of band evolution, right? It's not quite the same as a fake band. I think that's an important distinction to make here.
This is a fake band. Pardon me. Let me correct you.
Okay.
This is a fake band. Peterson is the only guy
Gary Peterson
was on any of the records,
yeah.
and for almost 2 years, he wasn't even there. There were five guys on that stage that had nothing to do with the records, and you're saying this is not a fake band?
I think if we're trying to draw a distinction between the numbers specifically of the members of the band that have to be in the band, what's the threshold for the bands who retain the ownership of the name in order for them to be able to say that, yeah, we are some of the people? We there's some continuity in terms of what the band is.
Well, in 2022 and 2023, Peterson wasn't even there for most of the gigs. So I think you and I have a different idea here about what's going on. This is not the Guess Who. This is not the Guess Who that cut the records.
Let's give people some context. Let's give some people some sort of the background for what's happening here, because this is a story that's been brewing for decades. I'd like to start with maybe the event that really set it in motion back in 1986. Long after you left the band, just briefly, what were the circumstances that allowed your former bandmate Jim Cale to get ownership of the Guess Who name? And how did you feel about it even at the time?
Well, simple matter is, the sick truth is that Cale lied on the trademark application. So this, I control the songs. They seem to think that
you own the publishing.
They should be able, they think they should be able to just go on stage and use my songs. They've had the name for I don't know how long. The band's name
a little over 30 years.
Exploited.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I don't know what's going on as far as when the original copyright was supposed to be done officially. It's hard to know right now.
Yeah.
But they have been falsely using the name for ages. The thing is, you know, the name was never really officially signed over as such. And that's what everybody's trying to say, that everybody signed the name over to Cale. Cale wondered, you know, at the time when Cale went out as the Guess Who, he still had Kurt Winter. At that time, he still had Donnie McDougal. It was kind of a representation of some of the guys that had been on the records. But not now. Absolutely not now. And you know, I've seen dozens of advertisements with my voice being used. Videos of this, of the cover band with our records playing in the background, you know? I mean, the real Guess Who ended in 1975.
So the timeline, just for people who are wondering, the Guess Who ended in 1975. I think somewhere around 1977, CBC asks the Guess Who if they would play a reunion show. And it turns out that for you and for Randy, you're not interested in doing that show. But Jim asked for the permission to say, hey, can I please use the name for the show? At least that's some of the public history that is available, is that he asked for the permission to use the name. And then from there on, he has ownership of the name, or at least he appears to have ownership of the name for the last 35 years or so. Is that an accurate history of what happened here?
Hale discovered that officially the name had never been trademarked. Hmm. When he spoke to us, the other guy, and I imagine at that time, Peterson, because he hadn't joined forces with Peterson yet.
Sure.
And Cale went and as far as we know, my lawyers have told me, and we've done all kinds of research, there was false information given when Cale, 1978, I think it was.
Yeah.
The band's name was first exploited in 1978. Had he written 1965, he would have been turned down because it was wrong. It was wrong information.
Hmm. We should also tell people that earlier this month, we learned that you took the pretty radical step of withdrawing the performing rights permissions for the Guess Who songs that you wrote, which essentially leaves the current Guess Who without a set list to play live. They can't. They're not allowed. They don't have your permission to play those songs live because you own the publishing. Tell me about how you came to that, because how did you come up with that idea? Because that's a pretty radical idea. What was weighing
on
you
as
you did that? Okay.
Well, my legal team came up with this idea, and you know, I've already issued a permission to Randy Bachman. He's out there playing the songs. Lenny Kravitz wants to play American Woman. He's welcome to it.
Okay.
There's a group in Ontario called No Sugar Tonight. We have already issued licenses to them. This all comes down to the legality of the use of the original records without a license. You can't promote a show with the original records when who's going to show up but a cover band? That's just not legal.
We got to say, you know, Cale and Peterson have argued, they've always been upfront about all of the band's member changes, and they've said they've never advertised you and Bachman as being part of the current lineup. What do you say to that statement?
Well, that's nonsense. That's absolute nonsense. I've got tons of things I've downloaded from the internet where they're showing this cover band on stage visually, and it's American Woman or Share the Land playing in the background, the original records showing the visual of the current cover band. What can I say? I mean, come on. We all know what's real and what isn't.
Hey, a lot of the reporting of this story has said that this move doesn't only stop the current Guess Who from performing your songs, it actually prevents you yourself from collecting royalties on your own work. First of all, is that really the case?
Well, listen, what is a person's life work worth, you know? I'm not just going to roll over and let this go on any longer. And Randy is furious about this too. This is not just me, Bachman. Bachman doesn't like the fact that you turn on the internet and there's an advertisement for the fake Guess Who, and you hear Randy's guitar solo from American Woman playing for 30 seconds. Randy's not happy about this either. This is a whole fake situation.
What do you do?
You cannot use the original records without a sync license.
What are you sacrificing? What are you yourself sacrificing when you pull the permission for these songs to be performed live?
Oh, I don't know how to, you know, I'm giving up royalties. I'm giving up everything right now to stop the fake band continuing. I'm going to do everything I can. And so is Randy. And it's just, you know, listen, here's a great way to put it. A friend of mine the other day said this online, a friend named Jeff out west. He said, the cover band is like a band of bank robbers who are upset that the bank they've been robbing for years has decided to improve their security so it can't go on. That's the perfect analogy to what's been happening here.
I want to say, you know, we've seen the current version, I guess, who cancel a bunch of upcoming shows as a result of the action. How does this end, Burton? What's the end game here?
The band cannot misrepresent themselves anymore as the Guess Who. So if they want to use a tribute name or something like that, that's fine. But they'll have to decide what value the name has without the songs. You know, Randy's songs, my songs, Kurt Winter's songs, they're still drawing people using the recordings that we made, that different people made decades earlier. A resolution to this? They can't play those songs anymore and call themselves the Guess Who. Everything has to change, and it will.
That was my conversation with Canadian rock legend Burton Cummings. He was speaking about his ongoing legal battle against the current lineup of the Guess Who. We reached out to the Guess Who for a response. The band's manager, Randy Irwin, said he couldn't comment because the case is still before the courts. However, CBC News reported that in their own court filing, Jim Cale and Gary Peterson say they have never advertised Cummings and Bachman as being part of the current lineup. They also maintain they lawfully own the Guess Who trademark and are allowed to call the band by that name.
Are vegans actually unhealthy?
Does cannabis ruin your sleep?
And why are so many men taking testosterone supplements?
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Greg.
And we're the creators of the popular YouTube channel ASAP Science.
Every week on our podcast Side Note by ASAP Science, we explain the science behind a controversial subject with recent research, up-to-date studies, and ridiculous stories so you are entertained while, bam, simultaneously learning.
We're here to make science make sense.
Download Side Note by ASAP Science wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we are back. I'm El Amin Abdul Mahmoud. This is Commotion. Okay, look, this is going to sound a little familiar. Last week, a union of professional screenwriters voted in favor of going on strike if they don't receive a new labor deal. But this is not a replay. You're not having deja vu. This is not a replay of last year's Hollywood writer's strike. This is happening right here, right now in Canada. The Writers Guild of Canada has voted for striking if its current negotiations with the Canadian Media Producers Association, or the CMPA, aren't resolved. And this is the very first time that members have authorized a strike in the Guild's 33-year history. Anthony Q. Farrell is both a screenwriter and a producer, is here to tell us what he thinks is at stake for creators on both sides of the bargaining table. Anthony, welcome back to the show.
Hey, man. Listen, your official strike correspondent here anytime you need me.
Every time it was like, a threat of a strike looms. Where's Anthony? Let's get him in here. Okay, first of all.
I just crawl out from my cave and let's go.
And I'm glad that you do. What are the writers fighting for here, Anthony?
So there are a couple things to understand, first of all. This is a very different situation than the Writers Guild of America. Writers Guild of Canada makes a deal with CMPA. Now, with the Writers Guild of America, their deal is with studios, Paramount, Netflix, those people. Yeah. Our deal is with the producers that are kind of like the layer between the writers and CBC and Bell and CTV and those people. Yeah. So what's at stake right now is we're having a conversation with them where we are trying to really hone in on just these three pretty simple things. We want coverage over the AI stuff, which obviously we don't want AI taking our jobs.
Yeah.
We want
some language, some kind of policy over the AI stuff.
Yeah. They're just to let us know that we're going to be safe and not going to be worried about robots. Like we need writers, not robots is the plan there. Parity with animation writers. They are woefully underpaid. And we need to figure out a way to get their deals to a place where live action writers are. And then another thing that we're trying to get in is like writers on set so that the words that we write are captured in the way that we need to be them to be captured. And also so showrunners don't have to be the only person on set so that they have, you know, as a showrunner, sometimes you have to be in three places at once. It's impossible. It's important to have another writer there with you to cover things while you're working on stuff.
Can you explain what that means, this idea of writers on set? Because I think that's, it may not be familiar for a lot of people listening.
Yeah. So when I write a television show, if we get to produce it, I am on set. They're answering questions for the director, talking to the actors. I'm also in meetings to make sure that we are capturing everything the way that we need to be capturing it so that it will look well when I go to post-production and edit it and make it for everyone to see.
Yeah.
A lot of times what happens is the showrunner and a script coordinator, someone who just kind of helps with the scripts, are the only two people left on set. Mm. And so as a showrunner, if you have to be in a meeting for the next episode that's being shot and also be on set, you can't do those things.
Right.
We need to have a system that lets us put in writing, there has to be at least another writer on set so that we can manage things. And also I'll say from a personal level, like,
yeah,
I usually try and make sure I have writers on set. I negotiate it with the teams because I know it's not mandated, but I want to make sure that I have coverage. There have been times when I have to be in multiple places at once, but also there have been times when, you know, family passes away, friends pass away.
Sure. And
I need that time to be away from set. And if there's no one else there, things can't just shut down because I'm having personal issues, right?
Course,
so we need to figure this out for a lot of different reasons.
Okay, so last year the Writers Guild reported to the CRTC that the earnings of its membership have fallen 22% over the past 5 years when you factor in all of inflation. Does that reflect like your own experience in the industry?
Oh, absolutely. It feels like not just my, like it's everyone across the board. What's happening is the budgets are remaining the same, but costs are going up. And writers seem to be one of the places where producers feel like they can save money. So they'll either cut the amount of money that writers are getting, or they'll give you fewer writers to be in your writer's room. That feels to be one of the places that producers have kind of focused on in terms of like getting savings. And now they're kind of focusing on, I'm not saying all producers, I'm saying some producers are now focusing on AI as another way to cut more costs and cut the writers out as much as possible.
I want to get into what some of the stuff the CMPA has said. So they said that Canadian producers value the work of Canadian screenwriters and sincerely believe that future Canadian projects should be written by humans, not AI algorithms. That sounds like a commitment to me. Is that what's your response to when you hear that statement?
Yeah, and I'll also say, as a writer, I'm also a member of the CMPA. So
I'm a lot of hats,
and a writer.
Yeah.
I'm fighting myself right now is what's going on. But I will say, like, that comment is shrouded in a lot of weird kind of like, here's what's going on.
It's not a policy. It's a value, but it's not a policy. Yeah.
Exactly. Also, with the Writers Guild of America, in their MBA, they have all kinds of verbiage that the producers and the studios, they can't get away with, like, created by credits, or they can't take away things in the certain parts of development. They are covered from the very beginning of the process all the way to the end.
Hmm.
With the WGC and the CMPA, our IPA kind of really starts with Bibles and drafts. So even
so
though
a Bible,
that
that's a later step in the process for the Canadian writers than the American writers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So say, for instance, if you develop a series or you just kind of have an idea, that's not covered under the IPA. So if they're saying that they are not going to use AI for the things that are in the IPA, that means that they can still use AI for things that are not in the IPA, which is created by developing series. A lot of things that writers now do to make money, because not every show is going to go. So a lot of writers, we rely on development to keep us afloat while we're waiting for a show to get greenlit.
Yeah.
And if you take that money away from us, it's going to create a lot of issues, a lot of heartache, a lot of problems with the writers. And then that number that went down 22%, it's going to go down a whole lot more.
Yeah, I think people also like maybe don't necessarily always know that like TV writers are always working. It doesn't necessarily mean that you're seeing the stuff that they're making on television. So much of work can be in terms of development. Like you're working on, you know, basically a work that is like earlier on in the process, and the idea that you would not be covered for that takes away from their income. I got maybe about 30 seconds left here. If screenwriters were to walk off the job tomorrow, how long do you think it would take for audiences to feel that, Anthony?
I think audiences would feel it in the fall. But I think the industry would feel it right away. The industry would feel it in like May, June, July. Like we need to figure this out. Writers don't want to strike. I know the CMP doesn't want to strike. It's time to figure this out and put this all away.
Anthony, it's a delight to have you as our official strike correspondent. It's a delight to have you fighting yourself and reporting on both ends of the spectrum. You're the best, man. Thank you for your time. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Appreciate it. Anthony Cufarella is a screenwriter based in Toronto. We were speaking about the Writers Guild of Canada's recent vote to authorize a strike if a new deal is not reached with the Canadian Media Producers Association. We are going to continue following that story, of course, as it develops. In the meantime, that is it for the show. Remember, you can find us on YouTube. Remember, you can find us on Instagram. We are Commotion CBC. Hey, we're doing like a Q&A episode that is about Taylor Swift. So if you have any questions about this overwhelming moment in Taylor Swift, find us on Instagram at CommotionCBC. Drop your question in and we're going to answer it in an episode that's coming out later this week. In the meantime, I'm Alamine Abdul Mahmoud. This is Commotion. I'll see you tomorrow.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.